Any banter? I have none.
No,
well,
nothing.
I literally got a new job, but
Hey, you got
I
a new
signed an
job.
NDA, so I can't talk about it on here.
Did you literally sign an NDA?
Yes, I did.
I thought Drew was joking when you were talking about that.
Nope.
That's so funny.
I signed an NDA.
Well, how fun. Your new job requires an NDA.
Yeah. Well, I quit my other job. I think I talked about I was going to.
You said you were
the
going
last
to.
Time I recorded.
Yeah.
And I quit my job. So, peace out, homies.
I wonder so much how they're doing without you.
Terribly. Makes I was sense. Their main worker, so.
Yeah.
That's what happens when you're mean to your workers. So, yeah, I started a new job. So, I'm a social media moderator. So, now I work from home, and it snowed this week, so I started work whenever it had officially, like, snowed a whole lot. So, my first 2 days, I just got to look out my office window and watch people get stuck in the snow. So, if anybody wants to see that, I have many a video that I can post on our Instagram if anybody wants to see it. Oh, it was so funny.
I still like that SUV pushing that
other car.
Other yes. car. To who knows where.
Just down the street. What was so funny is I noticed that day that a lot of people in my neighborhood, I don't know what their jobs are or mm-hmm. if they have any, but they just drive around the neighborhood all day.
Weird.
Like coming in and out, going up and down different streets.
I mean, but it might have been different because it was a snow day for a lot of people. Because, like, I was working from home because
yeah,
it was a snow
day. Yeah,
I was
thinking about that, too. I was like, maybe they're, like, and checking to see if anybody's stuck, trying to help other people
make sure no
out.
One
yeah.
fell down getting their mail.
I don't know. It's just very funny. We like literally didn't get mail for, like, 4 days.
That's fair.
Because they just didn't even go out and try.
I mean, I get that. That's a problem with, like, pharmaceuticals, though, because some people get their drugs mailed to them.
Well, that's what I was
them.
Thinking. I was like, there's a lot of stuff that people probably need to get mailed to them. Like, I understand not... I mean, FedEx. Not FedEx. UPS. That UPS truck went down every
there.
Single day. He got stuck. I have a video of him. he got out, though. He, like, got out on his own. Didn't have any problems. But I was like, if the UPS can go out... And the thing is, the mail trucks here at Mom and Dad's house never missed a snow day.
The United States Postal Service creed. Yes, neither snow nor rain nor heat nor gloom of night stays these couriers from the swift completion of their appointed rounds. So catchy.
Okay, so my story today is about the Gaffney Strangler.
I don't know that one.
I got my information from serialkillercalendar.com, wikipedia.org, grunge.com, and missnightterrors.wordpress.com. So, on March 1st, 1967, after having several drinks, 32-year-old Anne Lucille Dedmond took off in a cab, stranding her husband Roger outside a donut shop in Gaffney, South Carolina. He wasn't very concerned, though, because she would often do this when drinking. They were known to, like, get into arguments and whatever. And I guess she's, like, a bolter after arguments, so.
She just has to go on a walk.
She's got to get away. So, the next morning, Roger was informed that his wife had been found dead in the center of the highway between the towns
oh my gosh.
Of Union, South Carolina, and Spindale, North Carolina. She had been raped and strangled with a ligature. The police decided that Roger was their killer, and the grand jury agreed, so Roger was sentenced to 18 years and got sent off to Union County Prison Camp.
Oh gosh, when was this?
However, Roger clung to his innocence the whole time. I think he got charged in 68.
Okay, because like a prison camp? Does not sound like it's something that should be in recent history still.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I didn't look up what that means. I would assume it means like that weird stuff where you're just breaking up rocks all day and building
that's
a
what
wall
I picture.
To keep yourself in.
Yeah, that's what I picture.
But I don't know. So, around nine months after this, because multiple sources had different, like, not different years ever or like, different days, but different, like, months between when that happened and when this happened.
Mm-hmm.
And different, like, ages for
yeah.
people. So I took all the ages from Wikipedia. Because I felt like that was more reputable than the
just
serial
random,
killer calendar thing, you
random
know.
Random blogs.
Yeah. So around, somewhere around 9 months after this, on February 8th, 1968, the managing director of the local newspaper, the Gaffney Ledger, Bill Gibbons, received a phone call. The caller gave Gibbons detailed instructions to where two bodies could be found, and he claimed to have killed Anne Lucille Dedmond, and not her husband, and insisted this wasn't a joke.
Huh.
Gibbons didn't believe this because it just seemed very strange, but mm-hmm. also, like, if you're running a smaller town newspaper, how often do people call you saying they've killed people and here's how to, where to find their bodies?
Yeah.
I would assume not often, but I don't know.
No, that's a very serial killer thing to do.
It was the 60s, so maybe teens just used to do that.
Just prank called because they were bored.
Who knows? So, he didn't really believe it, but thankfully still passed the information along to the police.
That's good.
So, this also was strange to me. Gibbons and the police followed the instructions. I'm confused as to why the police would let Gibbons do this, but also, I guess it was a time when you could just go in and photograph a crime scene and step on the evidence.
Yeah, when you just could, like, sort of walk through the blood puddle if you wanted to.
Like, almost a seven... It wasn't as...
I don't know. I don't know how things were done
as it
then.
Is now. They didn't have fingerprinting. I know that. So, like...
Yeah.
Or this might... No. This might have been around the time they started.
This is when we're getting all the serial killers, so they have to improve quickly or everyone's just going to die.
Yeah. So, anyway, so he was allowed to go with them, and they followed the instructions that were given to Gibbons over the phone. I'm assuming he wrote them down, and this wasn't based off of what he remembered. But following the instructions, they discovered a nude female on a riverbank near the People's Creek Bridge. And she was later identified as 20-year-old Nancy Paris. She had been reported missing by her husband the day before and was last seen walking their poodle at night.
Where'd the poodle go?
She had also been strangled and raped, and they found cigarette burns on her back.
Oh, no.
When more officers arrived, they searched for the second body. They followed the instructions again, and it led them to the body of 14-year-old Nancy Christine Reinhardt, which also I had to go back when I was almost at the end of my notes because I was going to put Nancy down, and then I realized these were both Nancys.
Not at all confusing. I think that is just coincidence, though, I hope.
Yes, it. I think it was. There wasn't
anything.
If there's
a third Nancy, it's not.
Yeah, no, there wasn't anything in the notes that said anything about it, so maybe I'm the only one that noticed, but finding two women named Nancy dead on the same day would have been a red flag to me.
A little creepy, but also I think it was a really popular name at the time,
yeah.
So be like,
anyway,
oh, we found
strange.
More than one Emily.
Where was I? Oh, Nancy had been missing for 10 days... and both women were killed within a day of their discovery, so Nancy had been held captive for 10 days before she was killed. You're not quiet enough. These microphones are too good.
I know, I'm sorry. I'm so thirsty.
She had also been raped and strangled, and they also found cigarette burns on her body as well. So, 4 days later, the anonymous killer contacted Gibbons again and said, if they don't catch me, there will be more deaths. Typical serial killer crap.
Mm-hmm.
And once again claimed that he killed Anne Lucille Dedmond. So he's very adamant on getting the credit for all of his crimes, which is never a good sign.
No.
Gibbons tried to convince him to turn himself in. But the caller said, it's no use. I'm psycho and I'd get the chair. They'll have to shoot me like the dog I am. The only reason I'm telling you this is to get that other boy out of prison. He's serving my sentence. All right.
I don't know if that's like a narcissism thing or if he like somehow feels guilty.
Yeah, I don't.
I'm thinking it's a narcissism thing, but.
He's just got his issues.
Yeah. Oh, and that work camp? Still a work camp.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you lied to yourself.
I didn't know they were still a thing.
Are they still breaking rocks down and building
No,
themselves
now they
a
tend
wall?
Gardens and they eat the food that they grow in the garden.
Well, that's very cute. That's way better than breaking down rocks. What movie have I seen like relatively recently where that's what they were doing?
Do they do that in O Brother, Where Art Thou?
I think so.
That's the only movie I can ever think. They're a chain gang in that, at least.
They did it in that new movie with Ryan Reynolds and The Rock.
Yeah, they do.
But that's not like a Russian prison. That's not what I'm picturing in my head, though. I'm picturing something very gray.
That's our brother we're at, though. That might be it. The whole thing is just sort of like sepia toned.
Where was I? Oh. So, to keep him talking, Gibbons asked about Paris's poodle, and the killer said that he had exterminated the dog, but refused to give the location. So, like, I'm confused as to why you're okay giving the location of two dead women.
But you don't get to know where the dog is. But not the dead dog. Because he kept it. It's just his puppy now.
I don't. Anyway. On February 13th, 1968, 15-year-old Opal Buxton had been a little quicker finishing up her morning chores than her siblings. So there was a gap between them while they were walking to the bus stop, which was about a quarter mile from their house. And there ended up being about 50 yards between them when her sister Gracie noticed a man grab Opal and force her into the trunk of his sedan. And it says her brother ran off, but it was very, I don't know, it seemed like it was a lot of sisters, but then some places said she had a brother, so one of the siblings ran off. Yeah. So one of the siblings ran back to the house to tell their father, but the man had already driven off. So Opal's father ran out only to find Opal's books sprawled across the highway, which is very sad.
Yeah.
However, her sister was able to give a detailed description of the car to police. She said it was either a black or blue 57 Chevy. And I don't think she said it was a 57 Chevy. I think she just described like an older Chevy.
What is a 57 Chevy? Yeah.
Yeah. And then on February 15th, days after Opal's abduction. That's literally 2 days. It's not days. These articles made it seem very, like, this was very spread out, but it seems like it was in a very quick time span.
2 days later.
Besides the first victim, is what it seems like to me. After Opal's abduction, citizens of Union County, Harry Transu and Lester Skinner, that's such a, like, rock and roll name.
Yeah. It
cracks me up. were searching for her, and on a back road, what? I'm so confused.
So either
someone at first did fake names.
Henry Transow and Lester Skinner, or a separate set of men.
Yes.
Theodore Lang and Frank Henders.
So I don't know if someone made up fake names, or if there was a group of four guys that went out looking and got recorded, or
I don't know.
Because it said a lot of people in the area had been looking. So there's four sets of names I have here, because I got this from two different articles. So there's Harry Transu and Lester Skinner, and then Theodore Lang and Frank Henders. So I'm not sure who... Yeah, two sets of names. I'm not sure who did what, or if any of these are real people at this point.
Either way, two guys.
Two men were looking for Opal, and on a back road saw a man beside a vehicle that matched the description of the car that Opal's sister had seen. And the man saw them and promptly got it back into his car and drove away.
So the man who owned the car that looked like the car they were looking for got back into his vehicle.
Yes.
Because I did at first imagine that, like, the two guys who were searching saw him go,
I'm running away.
They got in the car and drove away.
No, it's the other guy. So they thought this was suspicious, so they wrote down the license plate number. And then they informed police, and so the police drove to the site and discovered a fresh pile of pine needles coming out from under a log. And so under this, they discovered the strangled and stabbed body of Opal Buxton.
Oh, no.
So the police were able to trace the plate number back to a 30-year-old man named Leroy Martin. He was a worker at a textile mill in Cherokee County. And sometimes
worked... South Carolina or North Carolina?
I think South Carolina.
Because before you were talking about being on the border, so I didn't know which.
No, it should be South Carolina.
Okay. I just don't know. Sure. I don't know the counties to know which one.
Well, all the people were found dead in South Carolina.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean he lived there. I don't know.
That's true, too.
And sometimes worked as a taxi driver. He was also married and had 3 children. And he also had a violent past, having served time in prison at another hard labor place for assault and battery with intent to kill. And it says that his victim was a young girl who he took into the woods, but I only saw this on one site, so I don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah.
He was arrested on February 27th, 1968, and claimed to hear voices saying it wasn't him who had killed the women, but another Martin, a darker Martin.
Okay.
He led the police to clothing from the victims and the remains of Paris's poodle. He also admitted to strangling the victims with his belt. So, Martin was convicted of first-degree murder in the deaths of Deadman, Paris, Reinhardt, and Buxton, and he received 4 life terms. And then after Martin's arrest, Roger Deadman, who had served, I think, only like 3 months of his prison sentence, was released from Union County Prison Camp on March 1st, 1968. All charges against him in the murder of his wife were dropped. And then on May 31st, 1972, while incarcerated at Central Correctional Institution in Columbia, Martin was stabbed to death by fellow inmate Kenneth Marshall Rumsey.
Which Columbia?
I don't know. That's why I took a pause, because there's a comma. I don't know.
Hold on. But I got focused on where it was. Did you say Martin got stabbed to death by a fellow inmate?
Yes. Kenneth Marshall Rumsey.
Was there, like, a dispute, or was it, like...
I don't know. I tried looking up information, but I couldn't find any. And I tried to see what that guy was in for, but I couldn't find it either. So I'm kind of hoping he just found out that the guy had killed
probably, like, specifically Opal, yeah.
And just wanted to kill him because of that. But yeah, I looked up more about what he did and what he was in there for, and I couldn't find anything. They just, like, every article I found just read a background of the serial killer, Lee whatever, Martin. So I wish I would have found this article last night.
What is it?
It's about the Leroy Martin, but it says in the, like, little header bio, the town banded together despite racial prejudice to find the man who killed both white and black women.
Oh, interesting.
So that's very nice. I wish I would have seen that so I could put it in my notes.
Well, now it's included.
Yeah, it is. Because I think Opal was black, and I think everybody else was white.
Mm-hmm.
But that's still very nice that everybody banded together.
They're out looking for that little girl.
Yeah. Okay, that's all I have.
Okay.
We're going to go and eat. And then we'll be back after the short break. I'm getting a third dog. Whether or not people tell me that.
I just finished painting your house at first, please. like you have to paint your house all the way, and you have to unpack everything. And then you can think about it.
Fine. If you're telling me that, I'll leave it in the podcast, so I approve.
Okay. Are we ready?
Yeah.
Do we have to say we're back?
Oh, yeah. Okay, we're back. Even though we just talked about the dogs, and I'm leaving part of that in, so...
You know, because you come back from eating, and then you...
This is our formal announcement, with a little more banter, that we're back. Okay. Now it's Sadie's turn.
Okay, so my story is about the castle.
Oh.
It's what it's known by locals, I guess. Okay. Or maybe not. That's what the internet told me, but I'm not a local.
That's how it's known by, as the internet says.
The internet says locals call it the castle.
Okay.
Anywho, so my sources are Explosion. Explosion. So my sources are, wait, how do you pronounce this first?
Beaufort.
Beaufort? Is it Beaufort or Beaufort? Beaufort. Let's do Beaufort.
Beau. That's how you say Beau, not Beau. Yeah,
I know, but people say Nevada for Nevada.
Stop. No, they don't.
Yes, they do. There's a Nevada, Missouri. It is spelt Nevada. It is named after Nevada. Nelvita. They call it Nevada.
That's what they say.
That's why I trust no one to pronounce their names right.
Well, anyway. Then we're going to say it how it should be pronounced. That's so, how we're going to start saying things.
I think we do that already.
This is how it should be in my mind. Just, that's why we say Nevada.
You say Nevada?
No.
Anyway, so sources. ExploreBeaufortSC.com. scpictureproject.org, and eatstayplaybeaufort.com. So all of mine are South Carolina-based websites.
South Carolina tourism websites.
Yeah, yes, exactly. South Carolina tourism websites.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. It feels good, actually, to have, like, local sources for something.
I know, I have a lot of those on there.
Yeah, no,
because people are leaning into
their local histories.
Paranormal.
Yeah.
For attractions.
Yep, and I like it.
Apparently that's all thanks to Zach Beggins. Don't tell him that.
I, you know, it's fine by me, because I know it's saving a lot of old houses, and I love that.
I love old places.
So, located in Beaufort, South Carolina. Good night.
South Carolina.
Located in Beaufort, South Carolina, the castle was home to Dr. Joseph Fickling Johnson and his family. I found out nothing about this man other than that he was real. He did indeed have a family and children, and he was a doctor. That's all I know about him. So the house is Greek Revival. The construction for it began in 1859. By 1861, the house was still not completed. I think it's because there were, you know, rising tensions because of, you know, the Civil War and all that jazz. So, like, one of their issues was they couldn't get any of the ironwork and rails that they needed to, like, incorporate into the structure, you know, to make it pretty and safe. Mm-hmm. Because of the Union blockade of southern cities. And states. So the unfinished house in December of 1861 became occupied by Union troops when the Union forces occupied Beaufort. So they first used the house as quarters and later became a military hospital. One of the brick outbuildings, because, like, no one could agree on what the brick outbuilding was, or if there was more than one, I couldn't tell from Google Maps because there's a lot of trees over it. So there may or may not be more than one brick outbuilding, but one of the brick outbuildings was temporarily used as a morgue during the Civil War.
Yes, it was.
So that's fun.
Love a good makeshift morgue.
Yay. So Dr. Johnson is said to have anticipated the Union occupation, which makes sense, like, you know, everybody's walking everywhere. All you need is someone who's slightly faster than the walkers to tell you, you know, the British are coming.
A speed walker.
You just gotta get those speed walkers.
Get the hips going.
So anyway, he preemptively buried the family silver in China under the floorboards of the same outbuilding that was used as a morgue, which is why I think there's only one outbuilding. I think they just have this summer kitchen. That was a morgue / treasure trove. So after the war, Johnson paid $2,000, which is around $34,000 today.
Jeez.
In back taxes to reclaim the house.
Oh my gosh.
Which sucks, but, like, you know, he got it back.
Well, he was a doctor too, right? So he probably had a little bit more money than everybody else.
He could sell the family silver if he needed to.
Oh, that's true. And China.
And here's the thing, the house survived. Like, it didn't burn down. Yeah, it wasn't destroyed. Like, he got. When it comes to, you know, southern cities and fancy homes in southern cities, he came out pretty good.
Hopefully he was also a good person.
I don't know if he was a good person, but I didn't find anything that says he was explicitly a bad person. Like, I didn't find a slave record, and I know how to find those, and I looked for the slave record.
He was a regular Civil War era man. White man.
Either way. So after the war, they finally complete the house. The completed house is, I call it three stories because the basement is basically all the way above ground. But okay. Technically it's two stories and a basement. It has 23 rooms, 8 fireplaces, 79 windows. They loved that detail in all of the things I read.
You've got to know
it has
how many windows
79
there
windows.
Maybe is, I should honestly, go home and count the windows in my
so
house.
So many windows. it has 6 two-story columns, and these columns go from the ground to the top, so they're complete columns, which is they're very proud of that as well, rather than just being like little supporting beams between the verandas, because these columns support the two front verandas. So now we're to the paranormal. That is the brief history of the Johnsons owned the house continually in the family until 1981.
That's kind of fun.
And now it's a residence. And I think it's only ever been a residence.
Okay.
Maybe it had boarders from time to time, but still used as a residence. Mm-hmm. But now it does also host tours. I think people live there and they have tours. Oops, I
That'd be so fun.
It'd be really fun to have a house that's worth giving tours of.
They did that with the, what was it, The Conjuring?
I don't know.
But I don't think they lived there full time. Apparently they had two houses. That one, like, shack-looking house.
Probably The Conjuring house I or think... the, what is that? The there's another one. Amityville Horror? Maybe that one?
No, because I know what that house looks like.
Okay.
Well, I think it's The Conjuring one. The Amityville one house kind of reminds me of The Exorcist house. Although they're not at all similar. They just really focus on the windows in the movies. So that's why.
Paranormal.
Let's not talk about Audrey's knowledge of horror movies because she truly does not watch them.
So the primary haunted report, the primary thing that haunts this castle, quote unquote, it's called a castle because it's right next to like a little offshoot of a river that acts like a moat. It doesn't look like a castle otherwise. It looks like a classic, like, you know, Greek Large revival house. Southern mansion. So anyway, the primary ghost is the French dwarf Gauche. Legend says that Gauche, that's his name, says that Gauche was the name of a jester brought to the area by French explorer Jean Ribaud in Ribaud, I don't know, an explorer from France. It's, that's all, that's the details. In 1562. We are very expressly not taught early South Carolina history in our home state of Missouri, Audrey.
I'm trying to look him up. Where's his name?
He's not, he's in no records. No, there's no evidence that this man ever sailed with Ribaud. There's no evidence this man ever existed.
No, I'm trying to look up Ribaud.
Oh.
How do you spell it?
Jean Ribaud.
Ribat.
Ribaut? I don't know. I assume they don't say the T because it's French.
Oh, look at him.
Anyway, so there's no...
He's sad.
Everybody was sad then. They had to sit there for so long.
They all their got... paintings. What was it? What was it? Dysentery?
They all got everything, especially STDs.
Yeah, STDs. Why anywho. Did I giggle at STDs? Like, I don't know.
STDs. Anyway, so there's like legitimately no evidence anywhere that Gauche ever existed, but it doesn't change the fact that this is who is said to haunt this place. Is this 16th century French jester dwarf. So it is unknown how he died, mainly because we don't know if he ever existed. But
mainly
stories...
because his name is straight up made up.
Because he doesn't exist. Anyway, so the stories range from disease, being hanged, or being killed in a brawl. Yes, he has a jelly bean head.
Look at this.
That's a bad painting.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, everyone. It's too funny.
Audrey's looking at paintings of the explorer, John Ribaud, and she doesn't like any of them.
They're so silly.
So, the ghost of Gauche was reportedly seen by Dr. Johnson himself, so the Civil War man, on multiple occasions, both inside and outside the house. He would apparently, like, just wander the gardens, like the ghost.
You know,
I'm not entirely.
He has to spend eternity here. Here's the thing. He's just chillaxing.
I'm not entirely unsure that there just wasn't, like, a random guy living in their basement that he just didn't know about. And he's like, I'm a ghost! And then would, like, run away into the bushes. Yeah.
He's just staying.
Because
he's taking said, the silver out from under that one shack.
That, like, Johnson's daughter, Lily, who's a real person, I looked her up, often had tea parties with the ghost. Like, just, like, constantly had tea parties with this ghost. Like, this was just a normal activity for her.
Or maybe it's just her imaginary friend.
That her dad can see?
Yeah.
Okay. So, today visitors still report seeing his apparition while on tours. Gauche is said to move furniture, open and close doors, and leave red handprints on windows.
Oh, that's fun. How?
I don't know, Audrey. Here's the craziest thing. He is reported to tap out messages.
Oh,
so he's tapping like Morse code in 16th century French.
Stop it now.
So I don't know
who
how they're tapping this out because Morse code.
16th century French.
Let me keep talk, Audrey. Let me talk. So Morse code didn't exist when he was alive, so he had to learn that postmortem.
Stop it.
On top of that, it is the daughter Lily who originally figures out that he's tapping and communicating. She's a child, Audrey. She has tea parties with him. She's the one who deciphers his tapped out Morse code possible 16th century French things that he's saying.
Was Morse code a thing in the Civil War?
I don't know when Morse code was invented, but I do know it was not around when he was alive. This is...
She knows French.
She knows 16th century French, Audrey.
1836.
So yes, Morse code existed in the Civil War. She technically could know Morse code. This child could technically know Morse code and translate the Morse code into 16th century French. So I have no clue.
Twists and turns with this story.
How this was possible. Anyway.
I'm thinking maybe.
Just maybe it's all ghost, made up.
No, maybe the ghost was talking to her, but wanted to sound cooler, or she wanted him to sound cooler. And she was like, hey, mom and dad, I know Morse code. I could be a spy. And she's like, you know who taught me? I can decipher it from my friend Gauche. And they're like, I'm sorry, what? And they're like, yeah, I also know 16th century French, mom and dad. And they're like, all right, Lily, go back into your tea party. They're just like, yeah, whatever, sweetheart, right. Get back in there.
That one's going to have to go to the asylum later.
Yeah, we're going to drop her off tomorrow
morning. She didn't. She's, like, a normal adult.
That's so funny.
Like, got married, had kids, lived in the house, like, was fine.
That's so funny.
So, here's some of the things he communicated.
I really thought it was going to be paranormal investigators that decided this. And now, I was like...
Here's the thing. Depending on which source you read, they make it sound like it's paranormal investigators, and then you go to a thing where they're literally interviewing Lily.
Oh my gosh.
She's the one telling these stories. She says
this as an adult?
Yes.
She should have probably gone to the asylum. Stop.
So, the things that she said he, like, talked about made it sound like he did, like, basically these taps were just, like, him talking to, like, himself under his breath about, like, the people who he's, like, watching doing stuff, and that he, like, just would swear a lot. Like, he wasn't necessarily strictly talking to her. He was just like, oh, these stupid, you know, Americans doing these dumb things. Like, why is their food so gross? You know, just like commenting on how they're living their lives.
He wouldn't have even known Americans, Sadie.
He clearly can learn things, Audrey. He knows Morse code.
Yeah, I guess so.
Like, long after, it was invented long after he died. This is why I'm pretty sure he's just a real person.
So weird.
He lived in the walls.
Yeah, maybe it was. Some scary home invader that was like, no, this is Morse code.
So it's said that even if you don't see Gauche, you can hear the bells that were attached to his jester costume. And, like, then there's also, like, a description of what he's wearing. So he's wearing, like, a colorful jester's garb with stockings and pointed shoes that have little bells on the ends and a hat with the bells. So that's what the ghost is supposed to look like if you see him. So during one of these coded conversations, because I think people have since had more coded conversations with him, or possibly it was Lily, it got confusing after a while. There's not a lot of, like, whoever wrote these articles didn't necessarily do the best job at being coherent.
Yeah.
So, anyway, some of the information they found out. So, it was either in a coded conversation or might have been when he was just speaking English to the investigator? Question mark. Gauche said that he stayed in the house because it reminded him of his former home in England, which made me full stop. Like, what? You are a French jester. Why did you ever have a home in England?
A home in England. I love this story.
Anyway, so the house reminded of his home in England, so that's why he decided to stay there. Like, he didn't necessarily die anywhere near there. He just, like, he decided he liked the house. Which is why I still think he was just a man living in the walls or something. Like, he was just like...
Well, yeah, but where'd he get this outfit?
He was probably, like, a traveling performer. It didn't work out. Then he found a way into the walls and decided that's where he was going to stay. He was like Bruno from Encanto.
I haven't seen that.
No, I think he was probably just dwarf performer, and he either didn't like it or it didn't work out for him, or possibly someone wanted to kill him. And he went and lived in the unfinished mansion's walls and just stayed there.
How thick are the walls?
I don't know. It's an old-timey house. They got thick walls. Well, there's always stuff in their walls. They're in their basement. Maybe there's, like, a room that he, like, secretly closed off while the Union were there. Secret room he lived in. Who knows? It wouldn't be the first time someone secretly lived in a house and played with the children.
Like in the attic.
Yeah, exactly, like in the attic.
Scary.
Anyway, so that's why he decided to stay in this house, because it reminded this French dwarf of his home in England.
Okay. All right.
And here's another option, is that maybe he was just being sarcastic. Like, what do you mean, why am I stuck here? I'm dead. How am I supposed to, like, you know, like in Ghosts, like they're just stuck there? Like in the TV show Ghosts, they're stuck there. They can't do anything about it. Whether or not they wanted to be there, that's where they are. And he's just being, like, sarcastic about it, because he's like, yeah, because it reminded me of my home in England, stupid. Like, obviously I didn't ever live there because I'm French.
And they're like, oh my God, his home in England. Write it down. Write it down.
Anyway, that's the end of The Hauntings. Fun fact, the wedding scene from the movie Forces of Nature starring Ben Affleck and Sandra Bullock was filmed in the front yard of the home.
I've never heard of that movie.
Neither had I, but I thought I'd share it anyway. So yeah, that's Ghosh. He may or may not have ever existed. He may or may not have been just a loose man living in these people's house. he might be very sarcastic. He might be a genius ghost and have learned Morse code post-mortem.
And taught a little girl
16th century French and Morse code.
Morris code.
Did I say it wrong?
Morris code.
Anyway.
Well, that's a good story. I think that's probably one of my favorite ghosts so far.
And it was also quick.
Favorite not scary ghost.
Like, for sure he's not a non-scary ghost.
So far, I think the scary one that I like is the baby falling.
The baby. Oh, I hate that. Mm-hmm. Where was that?
That theater in Springfield, Missouri.
That was upsetting.
It was. Okay, well, try not to kill anyone and don't mess with Ouija boards.
Bye. Bye.
You said that too early.
Well,
rude.
Wait, do you want to do it again?
Rude. No.